Committee, 2:05 on whatever today's date is now in session. Representative or present or Representative Coring and Newman, co-chairs Elkins and Gatto. The first activity. Okay. The first activity we will have here is I'm going to bring before us House Bill 259, which we have previously passed out of committee with amendments. And what I intend to do is to rescind our actions by rescinding the actions in two separate steps so that we then can adopt the version that has the amendments in them. But what we had done previously was to put the amendments in a bill and pass out a different one. And so in order to correct that, it's much easier to rescind action than to go ahead and correct things. So I'm going to ask it this way. I move to rescind the committee's action in reporting committee substitute for House Bill 259 transportation from committee. And I'll ask, are there any objections? Seeing and hearing none, we have committee has rescinded its action in reporting committee substitute for House Bill 259 transportation from committee. Secondly, now I move to rescind the committee's action in adopting any amendments to House Bill 259.
What were those amendments, Mr. Chair?
Those amendments had to do with remove pickup trucks from this requirement. And we did that by saying that vehicles with a GVW of less than 9,200 pounds wouldn't qualify. And we did this because we called various organizations to see what pickup trucks entailed. And if you talk about the gross vehicle weight, then you pretty much know you've got all the pickups included. And we did not want to include pickups in this, so they're excluded. We dealt with also with giving exclusions to certain communities. And Representative Thomas wanted us to exclude communities that are not connected to Anchorage by a continuous state road, such as passing through the country of Canada, would not be under the requirements of this bill. And also, if the communities were less than 5,000 in population. Basically, the bill was intended to do something about the heavy truck traffic in Anchorage and Matsu. And we wanted to essentially define what these words meant in legislation that already exists so that it's clear to DOT what our intent was in this original language. For the record, Representative Thomas has shown up, and I will want to fill him in on what we've just done. I think I talked to you about it earlier. What we've done so far today are two things. We've rescinded the committee's action in reporting 259 from committee. And secondly, we rescinded the committee's action in adopting the amendments to 259. So we basically don't have anything that's been done for 259. However, at this point, what I will then do is ask someone to adopt version S of this. And can I ask you to bring version S before us?
Mr. Chairman, I would move CS for House Bill number 259, Transportation, version 24-LS0833/S.
Okay, and so we have this before us. This bill is essentially the previous bill we've worked on, and this is perfect because it has in Section 1 dealing with the gross vehicle weight of greater than 9,200 pounds. It deals with the issue of snow, and it does change contained or confined to covered or enclosed. And the reason for that was, in talking to legal, they said that contained or confined clearly meant covered or enclosed. But if I wanted to, I could simply clarify the language to covered or enclosed, and then there would be no question about what the intent was. And then on the latter part of the bill, as I'd mentioned, we deleted communities under 5,000 and all of those communities that are not connected to Anchorage by a continuous State of Alaska road system. So those are the changes that are in this version S. And it's a good time to take up some committee conversation.
You say you deleted it?
It's back in.
It's still in there.
In version S.
Yeah, it's in version S.
In the version before us, it's in there. What we have in version S is to have those things that we tried to put in the previous version and passed out. We've simply undone our previous work, and now in the committee substitute, we have all of those amendments in there. So Representative Newman?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have some problems with this bill, and this is what problems are. A lot of our road construction goes, and I, from somebody who's run and dumped for many years, it's like a 1 or 2 mile trip. Generally, the pits are somewhere close, and they're going up and down these roads. And the amount of time it's going to take to cover each and every one of them loads is going to add a tremendous amount of time and cost onto every road project that we have in Alaska. I realize that there's a lot of gravel on the roads, but those don't all come from dump trucks. I know this is another one of those bills, I feel, that instead of enforcement, we're trying to do something else instead of fixing the enforcement problems that we have right now. I know when I would run, I would make sure that there was no rock sitting on the top of my bed. I know that there's as you had stated earlier, 6 inches from sideboard, maximum.
Below the freeboard.
Below the freeboard. And I think those are all things that I did while I was there. But for these companies to have to do this, I think it's going to cost a lot of money. There's a lot of rocks that end up on the road from people with aggressive tires driving off of gravel roads onto the highway that spit a lot of rocks. The gravel that's used during the sanding in the winter months that's put on the roads. And just traffic that drags it on. Four-wheelers that come up near the road and shoot rocks up on the highway. I know in Big Lake that's a terrible problem. Little creeps. But to put this burden in on top of dump trucks, in light of the fact that they already have laws that say if Bill's trucking, a rock flies off of his end dump and breaks my windshield, most companies are pretty amiable to the fact that they'll help you replace your windshield.
Okay.
They have insurance for that, and I can't support this. I think it's just going to cost way too much for businesses.
Donna, can you come up and identify yourself and your affiliation?
Mr. Chairman, Nona Wilson, Alaska DOT, and to answer any questions you might have. Okay. Specifically,
the question I have for you is addressing a question that Representative Newman made about time. How much time would it take with the automatic covers to cover a load?
Mr. Chairman, I couldn't really put a cost on what it would take, but the covers that DOT had said it would ideally want to purchase, you have the tarp with the manual arms, which we said no, $1,600, and we went for the fully automatic, which is basically kind of like a convertible top that somehow retracts over the our 8-yard dump trucks that would come over. That's a time saver there. I don't know what other private truck drivers would want to do. I don't know if they can afford a $2,300 purchase and installation of an automatic cover, so I don't know what it would cost for them. But for us, as far as time goes, a fully automatic cover would help us out a lot.
I've seen the covers, I haven't seen them operate.
Neither have I.
You press cover load button, and the top goes back and stops.
I would assume some kind of lever or button, yeah.
A lever, and you press uncover load, and it retracts. Probably do this.
And Mr. Chairman, to add to that, the reason why we decided to not go with the tarp with manual arms is because we'd also have to take our trucks and, of course, fit them for some sort of safety rating so that our guys could climb up on the truck, pull the arms down, fasten it on, snap, snap, blah, blah. So the fully automatic would be a time saver for us. But like I said, I don't know what the Trucking Association would say, and especially small haulers who maybe can't afford that kind of an expensive truck, whether they have two trucks or 30 or 100. So for us, it maybe wouldn't be so bad.
I just wanted to clarify the amount, that if it would add extra time, you're right, it would be a detriment to a trucking company to have to add an hour to their daily schedule to cover and uncover a truck, an hour of downtime.
Sure.
But if indeed it added 40 seconds of downtime in the course of a day, then I think we would simply say that's acceptable. Representative Newman?
Yeah, Representative Gatto, Mr. Chair. As far as like the downtime on covering trucks, a lot of times it's a short trip. It's 3 loads an hour that they can do. This would dramatically cut them down. Besides the fact that maybe Donna could testify this, I don't know how much experience she has in this, but dump trucks tend to get dirty. They, you know, it's raining and they get dirty. And these tracks that are that would have to be used to cover these loads would always be full of gravel. And you're going to have to be up there cleaning them constantly. The maintenance on these, from a guy, I did mechanic work on trucks for 6 years. And the maintenance that's going to be on these, I think, would be astronomical. This, I think, should also be included in the cost, not just the cost of buying the cover, but installation and maintenance on it, is, I think, is going to be quite a bit of money.
Is that $2,400 is installed, or?
To the chair, that's correct. But like Representative Newman said, I don't know how a cover would work, if it would be on a swing arm like a bonnet that comes up from the sides on some kind of thing that just covers the loads, or it'd be on a, like an actual track on top of the
container.
I don't know.
A top track
that
pulls up against the leading edge and simply uncovers down and recovers back up.
Don't know what models are available.
And I have to say, the intent here is, you know, if you're hauling something 3 miles and you don't want to cover your load, I mean, the troopers are pretty sensible people.
Right.
It's the people that are trucking something from a dump somewhere on the Parks Highway are now driving down the Glen Highway trying to get to Chugiak. And they're driving 60 miles, 70 miles an hour, and the stuff just gets ripped off in the wind for 10 miles. They lay down 10 miles of gravel for every vehicle behind them to kick up another rock, also doing 65. That means you're going forward, the rock's going backwards. That's pretty devastating when it strikes a windshield, and the cost, of course, is all, those are true costs. Somebody pays them. Your insurance company pays them. Then your everybody's insurance bills go up. So the cost of putting on the tarps and the cost of not breaking windshields, I think,
If I could add to that, Mr. Chairman, DOT does have a section in its risk management where we'll help a driver with a cracked windshield if they, you know, can get the number off our truck and say, hey, your rocks came off, whether it's the tailgate or the top or a big blob of snow from the top of the cabin, there was some sort of damage. We also have that mechanism as well to help people replace their windshields.
And that's true. I have a...
Or your hood or whatever happens to
I've tried desperately to chase a truck, but the rocks are coming back at you when you say, you know, we've already got the ding, and I just can't stay that close to them and with any sense of sanity.
Right.
Unless they pull off, and are you just going to track this truck and watch him and hope he pulls off and then tell him, by the way, you broke my windshield, and he'd say, how do I know? How do you know it was me?
Or
there
have
rocks
a pen and paper
in, there were rocks in front of me.
Right.
There were rocks that I kicked up because they were already on the road, and what we're trying to do is keep rocks off the road.
One thing, if I could, Mr. Chairman, when I spoke with not an authority in our trucking agency, but someone in design and construction who's regularly on our sites during the field season. I don't want to throw a monkey wrench in what you're trying to say, but I can reiterate what I said on our last committee before we passed out the bill, was that usually when there's debris or loose materials coming off the truck, it's because it's overloaded. It's too high up there, and the wind catches it and flicks it off the top of the load. So when we passed our overweight vehicle penalty bill, Would having a covered load encourage people to load up too much because they can just slap a cover on it and not lose the rocks but still run overloaded? So that's sort of a question I had as well. So maybe
I think
somebody
it's
else.
A pretty separate issue. Yeah. You're running overloaded, you just are.
Yeah, you and just are.
If,
right.
If you have no freeboard.
Right, but and as
overloaded.
An enforcement issue in terms of just having rocks that are piled up so high, they're just going to come off anyway, whether you're going over a bump or you're going 50 down the glen. That's one of the questions DOT had, was that, or one of the statements they had, so overloaded vehicles.
Right. Representative Elkins?
You know, Mr. Chair, I'd like to defer this because I'd like to see the minutes from the previous meeting. There's got to be a reason that we haven't even got close to it today. We're kind of leaning towards overturning what we did before. I'd like to know what the testimony was that convinced us last meeting to pass this bill, because we did maybe change a few forms, but still does everything that the other bill did. And we do have minutes from the previous hearing, and I'd kind of like to read those and see what those reasons were personally, Mr. Chair.
Through the chair, also, I know there was some question about the fiscal note as well, and it was so high that they tried to narrow it down just to our 8-yard dump trucks, and we were able to narrow that down to 94 trucks that DOT operates in rural, urban areas.
Mm-hmm.
That took it down to 216,000 from, I think, 800,000.
818 so was what the original fiscal note was.
Plus the Thomas Amendment. Yeah, that did help us bring it down, which is good for us.
Correct. And with the amendments, it came down to from 750,000 over 750,000 to about 250,000.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Newman.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd also like to I know I talked to the fellow of the Alaska Trucking, or the guy who was with Lyndon here the other day about a little bit. Uh-huh. But I'd like to talk to some other trucking companies and see what they thought of this. Wouldn't mind.
No, I don't mind.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Elkins?
I'm going to move to table until the next meeting, or give us a chance to look at the minutes from the previous meeting.
And I don't have a problem. Are there any objections to that? Seeing and hearing none, we'll just hold this bill until the next meeting. And of course, we'll be dealing with version S at the next meeting.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. We do have... I was wondering if we had any more DOT stuff here.
Yes.
But I think not. What I'd like to go next into is encroachments. That's House Bill 279. And I'm looking for the bill sponsor. It's on its way? Okay. So let's just take a little recess for a few minutes until we get organized with the sponsor. Are you going to? So we'll be in recess for
just for a minute.
We have before us House Bill 279.
We've got 30 seconds.
It's an excellent bill.
An act relating to encroachments in the right-of-way of a highway. Representative Stoltz, you have the floor.
Thanks. I'm trying to catch my breath after running down and to clear my mind of that muddle of purrs and turrs I've been sitting through. I'm here before you. I'll just give you a little background. I live in a community that has a highway going through it, like most others, and it was once a lot more rural and scenic, and as it's grown, there's people living there, some of them I know, that were beginning back in the 40s when my community of Chugiak was first founded. During that period of time, DOT had kind of an antiquated way of granting easements. Some of them are 50 foot, some of them are 300 foot. Now we're looking at a potential expansion in that area and other roads that are probably plays out all over the state of Alaska. Folks have what are called encroachments. They might have their lawns, they might have portion of their house just barely inside of the widest extent of the easement, and we're looking at this vehicle as a way to grandfather those encroachments that don't interfere with possible construction of road. And I have to admit, this is crafted more with the expertise of DOT and the innovation. I'm working with the federal highway officials. Very difficult to do anything without a federal blessing, and Mr. McKinnon and Ms. Wilson and Commissioner Barton have all been active in this. This is this our effort to try to protect folks. Many of them they don't want to move. Some of them the oldest surviving member of the community of Chugiak that when it was founded, he's living in an area that's within an encroachment. Our old territorial school, which is now a Head Start, Chugiak Children's Services, got its playground equipment and and children's facilities within the official right-of-way. Our volunteer fire department, which celebrated its 50th anniversary 2 or 3 years ago. It's a lot of things that had government approval to build facilities, and now here we're at. So there's some rigidity in the federal requirements, and we're trying to find some way to get around this without impeding the state's interests and without trying to be as creative as we possibly can. And the creativity is from the folks behind me mostly. But all we did is a screaming. Incidentally, our local paper asked us what's the most important issue in Chugiak, and three of us, without talking to each other, all wrote down the right-of-way problems on the Old Glen Highway in Chugiak. And I guess Commissioner Barton read that newspaper. And so I guess that's longer than short.
Okay. Does this run afoul of federal requirements for roads in that we may not get federal money so long as the encroachments remain, even though they're grandfathered?
Well, Chairman Gatto, that's... or co-chairman, I guess. I can't answer the technical part. It's we've worked in concert with DOT and who've worked with FHWA to try to avoid, to try to craft the legislation in a manner so as not to imperil federal funding in the future, which is always the big danger.
Yeah. Okay. Any other committee questions?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, would you entertain a motion?
Well, let's hear from from the public. To open it to public testimony now, and we have a few people. Try to get people who are here. I don't have a list. Anybody in the room wanted to testify?
Yeah, right here.
Come on up. I signed up.
Did you? I don't have a sheet of those that signed. Name, serial number, rank.
Rank, huh? Mr. Chairman, I'm John McKenna, Deputy Commissioner of Transportation for Highways and Public Facilities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this thing. And actually, from the department's perspective, we welcome the clarification that this bill gives us. Up to this point, it's been the department's practice not to permit or very sparingly to permit encroachments in the right-of-way because of just the way that we've been dealing with things with the federal government. They prefer the right-of-way to be completely clear of obstructions and encroachments, and we have had in our regulations the ability to do that, but it has not been our practice to do that. One thing this bill does do is it clarifies and does give us the ability to permit, for lack of a better word, outdoor advertising or signs within the right-of-way. That has been prohibited by state statute. There are probably somewhere in the order of under 100 of these within the right-of-way throughout the state, and they've become a problem for us, and they've been a problem for years. Many of these sign encroachments have been removed, but there's still a lot of them out there remaining. And it's right-of-way enforcement, especially in the sign area, has become a problem. We've got a few issues on the Seward Highway, but recently with the issues on the Old Glen Highway, it very very quickly came to our attention that we need to be able to deal with this thing or there's going to be a revolt. And in going through our regulations, we've got an interpretation of those that we need to permit these encroachments. Most of these encroachments occurred in good faith, out of innocence or ignorance or for whatever reason they occurred there. When you've got a 300-foot right-of-way and the road and its improvements encompass 100 feet of it, the 200 feet on the outboard side or 100 on each outboard side, what's the harm in allowing public/private use of that area? We do support this. We are waiting for a determination from the federal highways on the sign side of this, the outdoor advertising of it.
If we allow this and we want to widen the highway and use that 100 feet on one of those sides that have encroachments in them, and we've passed this bill and allowed an encroachment, what would then happen?
The people would be required to remove those encroachments. Okay. It's probably a cleaner situation to have those encroachments identified and permitted, and then there's an agreement on both parties that those encroachments are there. We're permitting those encroachments, but should they be needed at a future date, then the person with the permit is acknowledging and accepting that they may have to remove those at some date. It's cleaner to have them permitted than not permitted, Mr. Chairman.
And, uh, just break here for 1 second. Representative Stoltz, I have also an amendment sheet here. Was that, and I noticed that in the bill before me, if it is just the original F version, that the amendments are not included. And they're pretty straightforward amendments that make sense to me, so I think it might be a good time to enter the amendments. Okay. So if the committee, I don't know if you have these amendments.
We do.
It says page 2, line 2, following right-of-way, delete who erected and substitute the word for. And that makes good grammatical sense. Are there any objections? Seeing and hearing none, we'll go to the second amendment. Amendment number 2, page 2, line 12, following the word fee, way down near the bottom, the department may charge a fee, insert not to exceed $100. And that doesn't mean it would be that much, but...
Can I comment?
Yeah, please.
I think it's probably legitimate. That probably also helps provide a record of the transaction and helps pay for the cost.
I think that's
very reasonable.
It definitely coincides with what previously
Mr. Heard. Chairman, our regulations do have a $200 non-refundable application fee for any encroachment permit.
Oh, okay. So we're going to change that. Okay, that's what we've done. Are there any objections to adding not to exceed $100? So we can charge $100 or less. Okay, seeing and hearing no objections, we have these two amendments in there. So now we'll be back to, did you have any, Mr. McKinnon, you have any further testimony?
There's no fiscal note.
At this point, we're not sure what the fiscal note is going to be. Our original view of this thing was dealing with just the statute change to the outdoor advertising and dealing with under 100 statewide. It wouldn't be much. We're still grappling with how we're going to deal with this. It's estimated that we would just deal with it as the encroachments occurred in a highway project instead of going out proactively and trying to identify them and permit them at one point. If they're dealt with as they come up, the fiscal note is considerably less. There is some effort on the part of the department to deal with these things. The Section 2 implies that the burden of proof of that three-part test is on the department. I guess page 2, line 4, if the department finds that the encroachment does not meet the three-part test.
Let me ask you what would happen if somebody applies for or receives the encroachment permit and decides that they can now erect a 12 by 24 advertising sign because they have the permit for the encroachment. What would happen then? Because we did use the word grandfathering in some of the literature here. Does the bill specifically say you only those encroachments that currently exist?
Mr. Chairman, the bill specifically says for the encroachment that existed on the effective date of this act. We are in the process this year of doing a video cataloging of the rights of way, which would show the existing encroachments or any structure improvement located on the right of way. Okay. That would allow us to have a date at which the encroachment was. There may be a couple of months in there that are in limbo. This act, let's say, takes effect July 1st. We may not get that cataloging done until September.
I don't have that in my bill. Do we have an effective date in the bill? Because the version I have, which is F, just ends.
On page 2 of the line 2 on page 2.
It says on the effective date. I just didn't think, I don't see it. This act takes effect on, et cetera.
90 days after.
Okay, so it's just going to go with the standard governor signing, et cetera. All right. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, would you entertain a motion?
Well, we have a few more people here, and then we'll be three more, in fact. Anyone else in the audience? Okay, let's go to Mattsu Chugiak Community Council, Linda Kovac. Linda, are you online?
Can you hear me?
Very well. Welcome to the committee. Linda, go ahead. And it says you're on the Chugiak Community Council. You're a member?
Yes, I'm on the board.
Okay, board member. Thanks, Linda. Go ahead.
The Old Glenn Highway Rehabilitation Project, State Project Number 52515, is an upgrade to the Old Glenn, which runs through Chugiak. The primary scope of this project is to add shoulders, a pathway, and turn lanes at the major intersections. Chugiak has been pushing for this upgrade to increase safety for over 10 years, and we're pleased the work is being addressed. However, the history of this road's right-of-way is complex, and many costly encroachments have been built in this right-of-way over the last 50 years. The right-of-way itself varies between 60 and 300 feet wide, with several sections that are 200 feet. ADOT informs us that as a result of this project, all encroachments will be removed due to federal funding requirements. They say their hands are tied. ADOT's position on encroachments is, if someone wants to obtain a permit to have an encroachment, the application will only be considered after all existing encroachments have been removed from the entire right-of-way and the project is complete. And the list of allowable encroachments is minimal. Some permitted uses could be grass or flowers or parking in excess of what's required for the property. Also, it's not permitted to use encroachments for commercial purposes. ADOT has also stated that since the Old Glenn's right-of-way has now been thoroughly researched and surveyed, the right-of-way now must be enforced due to possible liability issues. This means that all encroachments must be removed whether or not the project goes ahead. If the encroachments are removed, there will be impacts to residences and to businesses that are adjacent to this five-mile stretch of road. Many will have hardships. Some people may go out of business due to a loss of parking. Some will have to find more land to install a new septic system or water well. We wonder why certain encroachments would have to be removed if they are not obtrusive. House Bill 279 would allow some unobtrusive encroachments to remain, perhaps like wells, lift stations, signs, parking, and others. This bill may also reduce impacts to the Chugiak Volunteer Fire Department's Latimer Fire Station. Right now, ADOT shows that the right-of-way line goes right through the station house, and the station's parking area will need to be removed. This bill may also reduce impacts to the Chugiak Benefit Association. This is a nonprofit community center which is managed by and belongs to the communities of Chugiak Eagle River. The Chugiak Benefit Association's parking lots, basketball court, and fenced play areas are all in jeopardy, and it's our recollection that the federal government built the basketball court in the first place. I hope that House Bill 279 passes. To me, it's just common sense. Thank you.
Thanks, Linda. I appreciate your testimony. Let's go next to Chugach Fire Department, Bruce Bartley. Bruce, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the committee, Bruce. Go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Bruce Bartley. I'm the chief of the Chugach Volunteer Fire and Rescue Company, and I'm urging you to support House Bill 279. Our Latimer Fire Station 35 is located along the Old Glenn Highway. Depending on which map or drawing you look at, DOT's proposed right-of-way is either right outside our front door or it runs right through the middle of the building. CVFD has occupied this structure for more than 50 years. It sits on BLM land leased to us in perpetuity so long as it remains a fire station. The two-story structure sits 118 feet from the edge of the existing pavement. This station is a hub of our operation. Besides housing an ambulance and five pieces of firefighting apparatus, it also has kitchen, meeting, and exercise facilities. We also use this site for most of our fire training. The loss of this facility would cause incalculable damage and jeopardize our ability to continue to provide public safety services to the residents of Chugiak. For that reason, I urge you to adopt this legislation or some other method to accommodate our important and long-standing presence here. Thank you, and I would welcome any questions.
I have one. If you lost 100 feet, that would put your front operating door about one car length from the road.
That's correct.
Would that severely or at all compromise your ability to dispatch, or would there be turning problems, or what would be the truly bad effect of losing all 100 feet? That would be a worst case. and having a mere one car length to leave the station.
We could live with that. I don't think there'd be any turning problems there. The bays that face the old Glen are house smaller brush apparatus, brush engines, and so we wouldn't have a real problem there. There could be a safety problem depending on sight lines pulling out on such a short throw, whether or not you can see up and down the highway.
Okay, and probably if indeed such a situation were to occur, I'm sure we could probably clarify the vision problems. Probably, is there already a flashing light there?
No, sir, there's not. There is a DOT sign, probably 100 yards down the road or so.
Okay. Well, thanks, Bruce, certainly appreciate the service you give to your community.
Thank you, sir.
Lastly, I'd like to go to Debbie Osiander. Hi, Debbie. How's it going?
Going fine, sir. Thank you. My name is Debbie Osiander. I'm a member of the Anchorage Assembly. I've been elected to represent the Chugiak, Eagle River, and military bases, Fort Rich and Elmendorf. I'm also almost a 30-year resident of Chugiak. For the last several years, I've been hearing concerns about the Old Glen Highway project, not because it wasn't needed, but because the right-of-way encroachment problem was such that many valuable groups and residents of my community were going to be really hurt by this project as it goes through. We have a historical Spring Creek Lodge on this property. We've got longtime residents, the Waddells, with their rural discount center. You've heard about the fire station. The Chugiak Benefit Association, I'm a past member of that board. It's a wonderful, wonderful community organization, and this would basically, as I see in the drawings, take out the playground and the front parking lot. We need some flexibility here. We need to be realistic and not just blindly follow rules, but try to make things work. I have been attending off and on the community council working group trying to search for solutions to this problem. They've contacted Don Young's office and certainly worked with you guys down there in Juneau to do the best they can, and I've been trying on the municipal side to see what flexibility there is, and there hasn't been much. So this bill is just a wonderful light shining in what I view as darkness. I have also had a conversation with other members of the Anchorage Assembly and have heard some real frustration from those folks representing South Anchorage about the problems on the Seward Highway, the impacts there, most particularly with signs. So I think that this is a wider problem than just the one affecting my community. I wholeheartedly support the bill, and I'm very pleased that it's being heard before you today and urge its passage.
Well, thanks, Debbie, and thanks for your service, and I'm glad I know you.
Back at you, sir.
I also have, for the record, a letter from Chugiak Eagle River Chamber of Commerce signed by George Lochner, president. His statement in part says the board supports this legislation. We have another letter from Merton Bangaman Johnson, president, Chugiak Community Council. He said the council voted unanimously to support this legislation. I think that pretty well covers it, gentlemen, ladies. Representative Kapsner, do you have a suggestion on moving this bill from committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move House Bill 279 as amended with the discussed conceptual negligible fiscal note with individual recommendations.
Thank you. Are there any objections? Seeing and hearing none, 279 passes from committee. Last bill is...
Thank you. Indulgence for my local politics.
You cry. Thank you. You want me to run this?
Yeah, would you? Is that an alarm?
Yeah.
The emergency door.
Oh.
Even though he wouldn't let me in through that door.
Loud. One little beep.
Okay, we have a.
When the fire department shows up,
we have before us House Joint Resolution 18, Federal Marine Highway Transportation Safety Act. We're hearing this today as a courtesy to Co-Chair Gatto, and so I keep my personal statements for later, I guess. So.
For the record, Cody Rice, staff to co-chair, Representative Gatto. House Joint Resolution 18 simply asks Congress to clarify or repeal a subsection of the Maritime Transportation Security Act of 2002, specifically 33 U.S.C. 5B. This is the provision that was ostensibly put into law to prevent Yakutat from taxing cruise ships which sailed by but did not stop at port. Substantively, it says all taxes must bear no more than a small burden on interstate commerce and must be used solely for services to the vessel which provide for increased efficiency and safety of interstate commerce. This provision has been interpreted rather broadly by some groups, and there's been quite a bit of disagreement over what the actual meaning of it is, including some comments by the sponsor of the subsection itself. Don Young and Ted Stevens have weighed in on this. I believe their comments from the Fairbanks Daily News Miner from their spokespeople are in your packets. I can answer any questions if you have any.
I see where they've weighed in. They've made offhanded comments. I wouldn't actually say that they've weighed in. That's part of my problem with this piece of, with this resolution, is that we haven't really opened up a dialogue with them before we've gone public with it. And I'm a little bit, I don't care for it.
Co-chair Elkins, I don't know that that's necessarily entirely correct. This subsection actually applies specifically to several taxes that may already be existing throughout the United States. And I myself have been in contact with both Ted Stevens' chief of staff, Don Young's transportation drafting attorney on several instances, and have discussed this particular provision with them. And in fact, last summer there was some talk of including some kind of a clarification in the Coast Guard bill that passed. It didn't happen, but it is something that we've been in existing conversations with them. It has been several months, so you're correct on that.
Thank you. I don't like this either. And, you know, we do a lot of things, and then we let our aides say we didn't do it. You know what I mean? And this might be one of them. I just don't. One, I'm not going to be embarrassing my congressman or my senator with the resolution coming from here. I think if you've been in touch with them, maybe you could have talked to them even when they addressed the legislature. And nobody brought it up to them when they. That would have been a good, better time than sending a resolution to the whole Congress and spanking them. I'm not in for it.
Are you saying we haven't had conversations with them?
I haven't. I mean, we, Mr. Chair, I'm saying that this year nobody asked Senator Stevens, nobody asked Congressman Young, and we had our caucus with them about this, and I think that would have been the proper time rather than sending a resolution to the whole Congress and telling our guys screwed up. I've known these guys 30 years, and I'm not going to be part of anything of telling them they made a mistake, especially when you're going through a spokesman. Now, if they quoted, say they made a mistake, I'd feel better, but.
Through the co-chair, Representative Thomas, I don't think there's any provision in this resolution that talks about a mistake. It just talks about differing interpretations. And for the record, I think the spokespeople have never been corrected since this was printed in the paper in 2003.
Representative Thomas?
Well, you're right on your first word. As a sponsor of the Federal Maritime Transportation Security Act, has, you know, then goes back and all this other stuff, has stated that it was never intended to block states' rights to enact. Now, who is the sponsor? And that's what I'm saying. And then you have all the backup here that's saying it's Congressman Young and Stevens. So.
Through the co-chair, Representative Thomas, the sponsor of this specific provision was Representative Don Young. and the spokesperson, I think it's fairly common for the spokespeople to speak for their representative or senator and to be essentially speaking on behalf of their representative or senator. And it says here, but a spokesperson for Rep. Young, who sponsored the port security bill, said Section 445 was never intended to block state or local governments from imposing a head tax on docking ships.
I guess I wonder why he sponsored it, then. That's what I'm getting at. If he sponsored this, he didn't know what he was doing. That's what I'm saying. I don't want to embarrass the man, so.
Representative Young.
Yeah, he sponsored it in response to it was referred to as the ACOTAT clause. The intention, as we sometimes do, we have unintended consequences. When we say we don't want something to happen, and we don't realize that it has some extensions that go beyond what the original intent was. And that's why all it does in the be it resolved that the Alaska State Legislature requests the U.S. Congress to clarify if indeed the intent was to, as you say, prevent any head tax from being imposed, it would be a fairly easy clarification. If indeed it was, as has been said by my aide as well as by me, that in conversation with these people, their representatives said it was never intended to do something. And so what we're saying is, if indeed you say it was never intended to do that, could you clarify that? And we're asking for a clarification, not demanding a change as we sometimes do. So I thought this was as gentle and easy, if indeed they don't have to do a thing. If indeed it was as intended, the result is as intended, then it's already clarified. If indeed they feel like that's true, you're absolutely right, and it wouldn't take a monstrous effort to clarify something, then they could do that. And I think that's a fairly gentle thing.
I think what Representative Thomas is saying, and myself, I think saying the same thing, maybe in different ways. But I think what we're saying is that there's an easier way to communicate with these people than to pass this resolution out and make headlines that could be embarrassing. And I don't see, like Representative Thomas, that we've really made that effort to take other means of communication with the congressman's office to come to some sort of resolution with this problem. And that's my main objection to it. And I think that, am I right, Representative Thomas, that I think that's where he's coming from.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Can I follow up on that topic?
Yes.
I'm not saying that I don't agree with this resolution. I just don't know enough about it. But usually when Representative Thomas or I want to communicate with somebody, we write it on our own letterhead or do Bush caucus or some other kind of communication. Getting a resolution like this passed seems like a lot of work in the last 3 weeks of session if you just want to deliver a message. Is your intent more to get the public on board with this or to deliver a message?
I don't know that the public is aware of this specific resolution, and we have certainly not made any attempt to have a wide public campaign. Just that in conversation with them, this is a follow-up to the conversation. I think that's something they would expect from us, rather than a phone call, rather than a verbal conversation, put it in writing. Okay?
Well, if committees go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is for Cody or Representative Dotto. Have you made any attempt to just to write a letter to Stevens or Young's office or Murkowski's, Lisa Murkowski's office, just asking them to deal with this on the federal level as opposed to sending a state resolution to them?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I have had several conversations, probably a dozen, with both the drafting attorney who works for the Transportation Committee for Representative Don Young and with members of Senator Stevens' staff, including his chief of staff, on this specific subject on numerous occasions.
Do you have anything in writing back and forth, Mr. Chairman?
Sorry. Through the chair, Representative Kapsner, we have not submitted anything in writing. It was more expedient to discuss things over the phone.